You are listening to Feminist Current. I'm Megan Murphy. On January 20th, 2021, President Biden signed the Executive Order on Preventing and Combating Discrimination on the Basis of Gender Identity or Sexual Orientation. Biden's order chooses to interpret sex as sexual orientation and gender identity, but leaves out any provisions for the physical category of sex, which means that women and girls may no longer be a legally protected class once this order is implemented. In response, American feminists are organizing. Courtney Piper, a former Child Protective Service specialist, a doula, a mother, a grassroots journalist and spiritual activist, has planned Women Picket DC, set to take place on March 8th, International Women's Day, in order to protest Biden's executive order and to demand rights as women and girls to single-sex spaces and sports. I spoke to Courtney this week about the event, about her concerns, and about her work as an activist. Over the phone from her home in Portland. Here's that interview. So thank you so much for joining me on the show. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Thank you, Megan. I'm really glad to be here.
I wonder if you could tell me a bit about yourself. You know, who are you? What's your background?
What's my background? Who am I? Well, I am a mother of children. I have a background in social work. I have a degree in counseling psychology and performing arts from Evergreen State College. I went on to do social work, and then I got involved in birth advocacy as a birth doula and started my studies as a home birth midwife about 11 years ago after the birth of my daughter. I did not pursue a career in midwifery. However, I decided to really pursue a career as an advocate, a birthing advocate for mothers. And that led me into radical feminism, actually. So that's my background as a social worker, a mother, and an advocate for women and girls.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into feminist activism?
Well, you know, I think my whole life I've always considered myself a feminist, but I think early on, you know, I had been indoctrinated, like many of us, into liberal feminism and thought liberal feminism was feminism. And it wasn't really until I was piqued around the, you know, this just gender identity issue and how it was affecting the birth community that I really realized the extent of this agenda and how necessary it was to educate myself, you know, around the tenets of radical feminism. And so for the last 4 or 5 years, that's what I've been doing. I consider myself, you know, baby rad femme, and have just been learning the ropes from the women that have come before me and trying to educate myself as best I can. But the reason that I peaked and the reason that I got so interested in radical feminism is because I saw the infiltration of the gender identity movement within the birthing community and saw how it was fracturing this community, an already vulnerable community. And quite frankly, I just felt extremely protective of the women that I worked with that were my colleagues and friends and the midwives that had been my mentors for so many years. I started watching, you know, campaigns against them to strip them of their credentials, to strip them of their authority, and I just became really protective of the elder midwives in my circle and the women around me, and that's how I started out as an advocate in this arena.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when you say you first started out kind of in liberal feminism, you thought that was what feminism was, and then you sort of were turned on to a different kind of feminism. I wonder if you could talk a bit more about that. What do you mean when you say liberal feminism?
Well, you know, I'm a product of the 80s. I was born in 1976. You know, in sort of the beginnings of the women's liberation movement. And, you know, I grew up on television. I grew up on American television. I grew up with a single mom. I didn't have a lot of parental oversight. And so I grew up kind of being babysat by the television, by MTV and Cosmopolitan magazine and these types of media. And so growing up with that influence, I really thought people like pop stars like Madonna and, you know, women like Gloria Steinem and all these women were what feminism was all about. And, you know, lived most of my life that way and affiliated myself with the progressive and liberal movements in this country, you know, voted Democrat and all that. But it wasn't until recently, in the last 4 or 5 years, that I realized that that party affiliation to the Democrats and also the affiliation with what I would call liberal feminism really doesn't do women and girls any good. It doesn't get to the root of the issue. It doesn't get to the root of the issue. In fact, liberal feminism nowadays is promoting things that harm women and girls. And once I educated myself around that, you know, I could no longer subscribe to those ideologies.
Was there kind of like a moment in terms of the gender identity issue specifically where you started to realize, you know, this legislation, these policies, this ideology could or would endanger women's rights? I mean, I wonder, first of all, when that was that you sort of started to realize that this was going on, and if there was something that happened that kind of woke you up a bit to this.
Yeah, I'll tell you specifically what happened, actually. It was a few years ago. I want to say it's been about 4 years now. I was on a thread on Facebook, and I was on the Midwives of North America Facebook page. And we were just discussing the upcoming convention, and some women were discussing how, you know, mothers give birth, women give birth, this kind of language was being thrown around. And suddenly we were attacked sort of out of nowhere by the moderators on that thread telling us that we weren't allowed to use the word mother anymore, that it wasn't inclusive enough, that we weren't allowed to use the word woman. And suddenly we were being shamed and ostracized and belittled and being called bigots and TERFs for simply using the language that we have always used. And that was the moment in which I thought, what the heck is happening here? What is going on with this compelled speech? You know, I'm not one to take lightly anyone telling me how to speak or how I should act. I've earned my right to have my voice. And I was just absolutely appalled that there was this community pressure, this socialization that was taking place, this peer pressure that was taking place amongst the community for us to stop using those words. And it really just blew my mind. And that's the moment that I was piqued. There was about 300 women on that thread that day that were lambasted with criticisms and name calling. And then subsequently that thread was completely erased. And then I went on to collect the stories of the women that had attended that MANA conference. And that's really where I got my education. I had women filling my inbox telling me stories about what happened at that convention. And I was just appalled at what was happening systematically within our larger organizations and how this compelled speech was infiltrating like every facet of the birthing community and midwifery. So that was my moment. I was just, quite frankly, I was just pissed that someone was telling us how to speak and how to represent ourselves. And I thought it was ludicrous. If you steal our right to our language, then how do we connect and conspire as women and girls? Mm-hmm. To me, it's just a fundamental, you know, act of degradation.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it seems to me that, like, out of all the places that this gender neutral language doesn't make sense. I mean, it doesn't make sense in any place, but you know, specifically when we're talking about mothers and birth and like the reproductive system, it seems so crazy to me that there would be a push within midwifery, within, you know, the birthing community, as you call it, to stop talking about women and females and female body parts and things that only females are capable of doing.
Right. Absolutely. It does seem absolutely ludicrous, right? But it's a technical strategy of war, essentially, to strip us of our language and our ability to conspire and to name who we are. I mean, my mom and my grandmothers went through the women's lib movement in the, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s just to simply address and to be able to name their bodies. It's only been so many generations we've even had the, you know, the confidence and the spaces to even speak about our bodies freely. My mom didn't talk about her menstruation growing up. Her and her sisters and her aunts and grandmothers didn't talk about rape and molestation. They didn't talk about sexual intercourse. They didn't talk about these things. And so really, you know, it was my generation that was afforded those, you know, luxuries, as it were, to even speak about our bodies. And once that, you know, women's movement really took traction, here we are, and we're rolling it back 100 years, forcing women into compelled speech. And we're no longer, you know, allowed to use these words that identify us. Megan, it got really weird. So that was just the tip of the iceberg when we started realizing that they were pushing for this compelled speech within our communities. But then MANA took a position also, and other organizations as well, that they began to omit the words of mother and woman from their literature and set the example for all of, you know, for all of the community to follow suit and do the same. Not only that, there was a petition circulating, I believe it came out of the Utah, this has been years now, but I believe it came out of the Utah Midwives College. Was a proposal that was circulated asking people to submit alternative names for specific anatomical, you know, anatomy, specific body parts related to the female humanity. For instance, they were asking questions like, what would you call a breast since we can't call a breast, or a cervix, or a vagina, or a fallopian tube, ovary, so far and so forth. And they were proposing that we change all of this language to gender neutral, basically word salad that didn't make any sense. I mean, this is how silly things really got, but people were taking this absolutely seriously as though it was some type of virtue to gender neutralize language that was specific to women and girls.
And I'm curious to know, I mean, you might not have an answer to this, but I'm curious to know who would have been behind this push specifically within the birthing community and within midwifery, because, you know, in political parties, in education, in sports, you know, it may be coming from different places, from activists, but it like I said, it seems particularly odd that within a community, you know, that is completely 100% dominated by women.
Right.
You know, midwives are women. that there would be this push to stop talking about women's body parts and women's bodies and women, essentially.
Yeah, it is very odd. And this is what I can tell you from my own research, because it did pique me and I got so interested. I spent years doing my own research around this. There was a strategic out. So this happens in all communities and not just the birthing community, but I'll speak to this directly because that's what I know the most about. The infiltration of our community started at least 15 years ago. So it hasn't just been in the last 5 years. But in the last 5 years, there was a particular individual that came on to the MANA board as an advisor. Correction, she wasn't on the board, but she was an advisor to the board. This person's name is Indra Lucero. Indra Lucero plays a huge part in the way that MANA then adopted these educational protocols or these compelled speech mandates. She belongs to an organization called Elephant Circle, who's affiliated with the Palm Institute, which is funded and headed by James Pritzker, aka Jennifer Pritzker, who is one of the wealthiest trans women in the world. And his organization funds not only military initiatives, but educational initiatives. Indra Lucero worked for him for 8 years. Okay, so she was essentially trained, through the Palm Institute. And it's my belief that it was absolutely deliberate, a deliberate tactic for her to infiltrate our community. She did so positioning herself as somewhat of an ally, someone who was there to protect the birthing community, someone who was there to work on behalf of decriminalizing marijuana use and mothers. She had a lot of footing and a lot of, weight that she used to influence the educational component of the MANA board. And that's where we see this taking root through Indra Lucero and the Elephant Circle into our communities. Once she was on as advisory to that board, that's when we started to see the compelled speech roll out, and we started to see the socialization and the mandates, and we started to see, on a physical level at the conferences, women physically being silenced, women physically being removed from rooms and being silenced simply because they weren't adhering to the now imposed compelled speech mandates within that organization.
And what happened when you started speaking out about this issue?
What happened? Oh, wow. So many things happened. My inbox began to get flooded with stories from women from all over the world, but especially women in this country who are in the birthing community, sharing their own experiences and their own devastation and confusion around the compelled speech. I started speaking out on behalf of the birthing community myself because I'm a mother, a concerned parent, but also because I'm a doula and trained as a home birth midwife. And quite frankly, I just felt like I had the responsibility to speak out because so many women could not. And once I did start speaking out publicly, I started experiencing harassment, bullying, doxing. I've been threatened with murder. I've been threatened with rape. My children have been threatened. It became a really contentious. I became very, well known in the community as someone that was speaking out on behalf of the birthing community. And quite frankly, I was blacklisted from a lot of my community. This compelled speech issue and this gender identity issue essentially fractured a very vulnerable community that was vulnerable already and split us down the middle. I mean, truly split women and pitched women against one another. So I'm not alone in the fact that I lost a lot of colleagues and friends, or that I was blacklisted from my community, or that I received these murder threats and rape threats. But I think I've always felt that I've had the responsibility to speak out because there are a lot of women that don't have the ability to do so and can't risk it, can't risk their livelihoods to do so.
Mm-hmm. And now you're organizing a protest called Women Picket DC 2021, which is taking place March 8th. Can you tell me about that? What led you to organize this this protest event?
Yeah, thank you, Megan. This is really important. So beyond the scope of the birthing community, which is near and dear to my heart, these policy changes with Biden's executive order enacted the first day in office that he took office, these policy changes from the federal level down affect every facet of society. And it's not just my opinion. I share this opinion with many of my esteemed colleagues that it's essentially a federal bullying of all organizations that receive federal funding. And what it does is it gives organizations 100 days to implement these policy changes to include gender identity or to essentially conflate gender identity with sexual biology. And that also then lends itself for the quote unquote Equality Act to be passed, essentially uncontested in Congress. And so the way that this campaign kicked off was simply I was having a conversation with my friend Kara Dansky over the phone one morning. We were having coffee, and she was filling me in on the fact that Biden had passed this EO. We were very upset about that. And she asked me, she said, "Do you want to come to Washington, D.C. and stand out from the White House with me?" And I said, "Absolutely." Within about 35 minutes of her having that idea, I started putting out feelers to women in my community. And I mean, within 24, 48 hours, suddenly we were an internationally endorsed campaign with over 10 endorsements, domestic and international. Now we have a coalition of over 50 women that are volunteering. We have a staff, an admin staff of 10 women working on this campaign. And we are going to be protesting March 8th in front of the White House. We're going to have keynote speakers. We're going to give women an opportunity to speak out on behalf of their communities. And we are demanding reform on this EO. We are really sick and tired of women and girls being thrown under the bus. We want the buck to stop here. We know what is at stake if this EO is indeed, rolled out and enacted as it is right now, and if this Equality Act passes. It essentially places women and girls in this country as third-class citizens. If we are not allowed to use gender-specific language that identifies us as related to our biological sex class, then we cease to exist in the eyes of the law. And women and girls the world over and in the United States still do not have safety and sanctity and protection from sex-based violence. That is the reason we have sex-segregated spaces to begin with. It's not as though we live in a peaceful society where we're not subjected to violence. We are subjected to violence on a daily basis. So this EO and the Equality Act seeks to destroy our ability to have those sex segregated spaces and to delineate ourselves as females, women, adult human females. Kara expresses this in her last few interviews, and Lierre Keith has also echoed the same sentiment. This is an emergency. Okay. We've been, myself, I've been working as an advocate in radical feminism now for 5 years. And I often just get this attitude from most people that we're like chicken littles running around with our heads cut off, for lack of a better word, hysterical women that are just making mountains out of molehills. And I cannot express this enough, that this is truly a dire emergency in this country, that women need to unify as one voice. We need to drop the purity politics. We need to drop the partisan affiliations, and we need to come together under one umbrella, under one women's movement that is for women, by women, of women, for the betterment of women and girls in this country. And we simply cannot have any traction. We cannot maintain a foothold for women and girls if we're not allowed to identify as who we are, if we're not allowed to use our language and to be represented in policy and law as women and girls, as sexual, biological, material reality, women and girls. So this is everything. This is huge. This is huge. And that's why there's been, within 48 hours, 50 women coming together and running this campaign on the behalf of all women and girls in this country, because we believe so wholeheartedly in this mission and we know what's at stake.
I totally agree. I'm with you. And in terms of your specific demands, what would you like to accomplish via this protest? I know you mentioned reforms to the executive order. What does that actually mean in practice?
Well, for one, we need to not conflate gender identity with sexual biology then and there. We need to delineate and make sure that women are represented as a protected sex class within these policies and under the law. Women reserve the right to be seen as whole human beings. We reject the notion that we are an identity. We reserve the right to have single-sex spaces, including bathrooms, changing rooms, locker rooms, military barracks, shelters, prisons, and rape crisis centers. We insist on the integrity and privacy and safety of our bodies. Anything less is a violation and enforcement of rape culture. Women and girls deserve sex-segregated sports and the rights conferred under Title IX to fair opportunities and participation for scholarships and opportunities. I mean, this is where a lot of low-income women and girls are allowed opportunities through the sports arena, and that will be stripped. I mean, we're seeing that already now. We're seeing boys and men compete in women and girls' sports and crush them, like literally crush them, crush their skulls, beat them out of opportunities, win scholarships and placements that would otherwise be afforded to girls. We demand that we have the right to choose a healthcare provider of our own sex. If I go in for a pap smear and I want to have a female attending me, I should have that right. If I'm in a hospital setting and I'm giving birth to my child, I should have the right to have a female midwife. My grandmother, my elder, has the right to a female attendant in her nursing home or otherwise. And just the bottom line, Megan, we reserve the right of free speech. Women and girls deserve the right to name our material reality, and we deserve the right to use accurate language when we're speaking out about human sex and being able to name men as men and males as males, who are, you know, perpetrators of violence against women and girls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many women do you expect to attend on March 8th?
That's a great question. I would say right now, my best guesstimate, I would say between 50 and 100 women, I believe, will be there protesting. I can't speak, to what can happen in the next 20 days, because our campaign is just now hitting most of the media outlets like yours. And we will have some spots in some national news. And so it really could get a lot bigger than we anticipate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Awesome. I'm curious to know, I don't know what the COVID restrictions are in DC. Do you anticipate, or are you worried that these restrictions will impact your protest?
You know, we're taking all the precautions that we need to as far as the COVID-related issue. I know that we will have to, there's ordinances to mask up, obviously, and all the campaigners and women participating will be adhering to that. We'll be adhering to the protocols around proximity. So we'll have our speakers and folks, spaced appropriately. We're taking all the necessary precautions that are COVID-related, permit-related. We are in good relationships with the law enforcement in D.C. Women are, taking responsibilities for their bodily sovereignty and autonomy and their own safety. And we are on board with all those regulations.
Okay, awesome. How can women either get involved or support your campaign?
Oh, fantastic. Well, we still are onboarding delegates. So if you're interested in supporting directly the campaign, all you need to do is send an email to info@womenpicketdc.org. Let us know that you want to be a delegate, and we will outfit you with everything that you need to delegate and do outreach for us. We're still welcoming women and allies aboard to do that. If you're unable to be a delegate, or if you are unable to come to Washington, D.C. to protest with us, there are other ways you can get involved. Namely, you can donate to our Give Butter campaign. And you would just go directly to our website, which is womenpicketdc.org. There's a link to the Give Butter campaign, and we are happy to take your donations. You can also sign the declaration through WHRC, which is the Women's Human Rights Campaign. Please sign that declaration. It's almost identical to the demands and strategies that our campaign has produced. And they are the best representation of not only our domestic coalition, but the International Coalition of Women Human Rights. And please take a look at their page and sign that declaration. But first, formidably, we really need funding support. It's difficult to come up against the millions and millions of dollars, you know, that the opposition has in place. And so funding really helps us not only get our messaging out and provide supplies, transportation, and lodging for our speakers, but also we'll be running a campaign to raise funds for the safety of our keynote speakers. And I want to really stress how important this is. I have to hire private security. Megan, I know that you're no stranger to this, and that we, and I know that there, you know, when you speak, you need high levels of security. But it should strike anyone as extremely concerning that women have to have private security and or body armor to stand outside and have their voices be heard. But that's the situation that we are in. And so a lot of these funds are going to go towards our private security and keeping women safe while they're on the ground there in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I am familiar with that, and I know how costly it is, and I know that I can't do an event without private security myself because it's too dangerous, which is crazy. So, yeah, I get it. Thank you so much for explaining that. I'm really happy to have heard your story and to share your story with our audience, and it was really great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
It was great to talk to you too, Megan. Thank you for having me on.
You just heard an interview with Courtney Piper, a former Child Protective Service specialist, the founder of Red Tent Productions. She is the founder of witchandbitch.org and of womenpicketdc.org. She's also involved with the Women's Human Rights Campaign USA. Again, to learn more about the protest plan for March 8th and to get involved, please visit womenpicketdc.org. That is all the time we have for today. I'm Megan Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to Feminist Current. You can find us online at feministcurrent.com, tweet at us at feministcurrent, or send us an email at info@feministcurrent.com. We are hosted by Libsyn. And you can subscribe to the Feminist Current Podcast anywhere you like to listen. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, TuneIn, Spotify, and beyond. You can even give us 5 stars and a review on iTunes. Please do. Feminist Current is produced and hosted by myself, Megan Murphy, out of Vancouver, BC. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider making a donation to support our work. We are independent. We don't have advertisers, funders, grants. It's all on you. Just visit feministcurrent.com and click the donate button.